Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome back to Geeking In. I am Jay, I'm your party host, so grab your bourbon, your beer, or your brew, half sugar and almond milk, just the way you like it, and strap in for a sweaty episode, because my God, it's hot. I am always by the incredible, the invincible, the infamous, our futurist, our Tony Stark. How you doing, T?
So amazed that on the hottest day of all time, we're all flagging and somehow barely able to get words out. You managed to get the intro right, perfect, first time. Amazing.
Yeah, it bodes badly for the rest of the show, doesn't it, if I've peaked this early in. But when we're talking about peaking, we are talking about Mr. Fantastic, the flexible friend, the pajamaed prince of the pause that was promised. Don't wait too long, B. It's too hot.
Yo, what's up, bitches?
Here's a shout out to all of our pimps and players from Hemel Hempstead to Dublin to Oregon and beyond. Thank you very much for continuing. I can already hear you've killed T. Thank you for continuing to rate, review, subscribe and share and helping us grow the conversation. And at Geeking in the Pod is where you can get involved in the conversation, both on Instagram and on Twitter. And in there you will find the Linktree link that takes you to everywhere we are, including Teespring, where you can order our t-shirts, our mugs and our masks. And if you've ordered a t-shirt from us already, go back, order a second, order a fourth, order a fifth, if you wish. And whilst we are talking about fifth, the fifth brother could be on his way to a live-action Star Wars series. Have you all given up? No?
No, nothing from me.
No.
No? That was all right as a segue?
Yeah. What?
I've got no idea what the fuck you're talking about, man.
So, news has broken. And that's the show. So, news has broken that allegedly Sung Kang, Han from the Fast and Furious films, has been cast as the fifth brother recently seen on Star Wars Rebels to play that character in the upcoming Obi-Wan Kenobi series on Disney Plus. The fifth brother is one of the Inquisitors, a clandestine group trained in the ways of the Force who use their skills to hunt down the last remnants of the Jedi Order and reinforce the Empire's rule. Kang himself has been fairly tight-lipped about the series, but he did promise that his character would have a sexual deliciousness to him.
Sexual deliciousness.
I think B's got an opportunity to sue that. I'm fairly sure he's trademarked sexual deliciousness. The same report suggests that Kenobi will feature a young Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa as part of the series, and that Vivian Lyra Blair has been cast as the young princess of Alderaan. Apparently, Leia will be a part of Kenobi in a big way, and that her role in the story is pretty much the impetus for the whole show and what gets Obi-Wan into another adventure. We already know that Hayden Christensen is due to return. Mm-hmm. Joel Edgerton and Bonnie Preece are resuming their roles as Owen and Beru Lars. And we're expecting to see this in 2022. So, B, as our own sexual deliciousness, mm-hmm. Is this making you salivate for the dusty old man that is Obi-Wan Kenobi?
So we've talked about this on a previous episode. I'm pretty sure we have. And I do remember saying that I wasn't interested one bit in Obi-Wan Kenobi coming to Disney Plus. I
is
still
that just because they've stolen your catchphrase.
No, I can't say that I'm looking forward to it. It frightens me that they're going to revisit this and, you know, possibly ruin a character which, you know, had such a big part to play in, you know, a few movies that I love so much. Admittedly,
you mean the prequels?
No, you know, I don't mean the prequels. I don't know, it frightens me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's I continue to struggle with Kenobi because my thing always was that, you know, and then he sits in the desert for you know, 15 years looking after Luke, or 17 years looking after Luke. And his job is to sit on, you know, with the worst disguise ever, because, you know, he's changed his name from Obi-Wan to Old Ben, in the hope that no one will find him. Yeah, we're, you know, that's kind of what we're led to believe he's done. He's hidden from the Empire, so much so that everyone thinks he's dead, including Vader. He's just hidden away, watching who could be the chosen one and making sure he's safe. We get a revisit of that during Rebels, where Maul goes to track him down and they have their confrontation. But, you know, that's where he is, and he's at peace with the fact that, you know, he's continuing his studies of the Jedi ways, continues to hone his craft just as Yoda does on Dagobah, but they fucking hide because that's what the remnants of the Jedi Order do. What we seem to have now is him off gallivanting, including running into Inquisitors, whose entire job is to find Jedi, kill them, and then report back to the Grand Inquisitor and their boss, Darth Vader, about where they found remaining Jedis. So Obi-Wan Kenobi turning up on something is probably going to be something that Darth Vader, the man who was maimed by him, would want to know. Guess who we found? Your old master. So this kind of trying to squeeze this, you know, one last adventure where it, you know, he's obviously coming off of Tatooine because, you know, otherwise we've got Princess Leia who's turning up weirdly, and running into Inquisitors just feels like, yeah, it just feels like it's going against everything that we thought was happening. T, are you on the side of negativity with both of us, or have you found to be the light side of the Force?
No, I can't wait for this show. I am so fucking excited. I've been excited for it. This is the show. I mean, I wanted an Obi-Wan film trilogy, but I'll settle for a show.
Of him sitting by the fire?
Yeah, I cannot wait. I think it's perfect.
To be fair, you have just sat through the extended cuts of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, so...
As I do annually.
Long films where nothing happens is kind of your wheelhouse on some of this.
That's my jam, you know. The less you know about the characters, the better. I can't wait. I think there's a lot of very interesting stories to be told. Yeah, so I was not up for Solo even before Solo came out, right? And it was fucking awful. So arguably it should kind of be the same thing. It's just I'm really interested in Obi-Wan beyond this. I wasn't, I think, particularly interested in the continuing adventures of Han Solo or the prequel adventures of Han Solo. The first time I liked the in-betweeny stories were in the comics. So when they started to do the recent Marvel comics? Yeah. Where Luke started to find Obi-Wan's diary in every, like, six issues where they had a break between the main story. So this took place between New Hope and Empire. But basically they had this huge adventure in between the two films, which is really interesting. And every between story arcs, Luke would sort of just read Obi-Wan's diary, and it was just shit that Obi-Wan was getting up to. And it's just fascinating stuff. And I was a bit afraid that, oh, have they covered it all? Because, you know, it's all one set new canon. But then in what little I managed to get through of the Bad Batch, in the pilot, they contradicted something that happened in the Kanan Jarrus comic. So actually, it basically means what you've read in the comics doesn't matter, you know. It is going to be, the films are probably the the main chronology, yeah. And then probably TV shows be below that, and then comics sort of below that, that kind of stuff. So I think there's interesting stories to be told. I think, you know, you guys have very, very valid concerns, and I have faith in the storytellers to address those concerns. I think it'll be really interesting how they're addressed. Why I have faith in them being able to do a prequel, given the record is basically the Star Wars prequels and Han Solo, I don't know. But I do. I'm really, really fucking excited. I want to see Ewan McGregor back in as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And now Han from Fast and the Furious. Sorry, I forgot the actor's name. But yeah, great, man. Bring it all on. I'm hyped.
Sung Kang is the actor's
even
name.
If we're talking about, you know, if the TV show doesn't particularly matter and, you know, the movies are the main canon, we could see that Darth Maul versus Obi-Wan fight all over again, but, you know, done in a very different way. But whatever they do with it, I'm really hyped. I want to see more. I'm excited.
I mean, you know, if you're looking at the TV shows from Disney Plus for Star Wars, then, you know, there's reason to be optimistic. The Mandalorian's done an incredibly good job of finding gaps between the beats of the stories to tell its story. And even series two that I was very worried about, because you were starting to see, you know, Boba Fett was in there and Ahsoka Tano was in there. And turns out, spoilers for something that's been out about a year now, Luke Skywalker has a cameo and all the rest of it. I was worried that, you know, that because they were going to have so many main established people in now, that maybe that kind of loses from the story that they were telling. But I think they still did a very good job of that.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
You know, the precedents they've set about weaving a story in and still docking it where it needs to end, potentially is a worry that isn't there. I do think we're going to continue the prequel element of, have you ever wondered why Obi-Wan Kenobi was called Old Ben? We're going to show you.
And obviously, you know, hopefully that's the lesson they've learned from Han Solo, because that stuff is just bollocks. No one wants that stuff.
That bad.
So you say that's the lesson they've learned from Han Solo. However, they've just done exactly the same thing in Cruella de Vil, who has taken her name because her name's Estella, but she's cruel. So people called her Cruella.
It's Disney.
And then her car, she likes the car, the DeVille, so she named herself after a car. So everyone who's now attached to Disney, either through historic or through purchases, kind of has an observational word association thing with naming.
And so, you know, if the worst thing about the show is at one point they go, oh yeah, Obi-Wan likes Ben the bartender and decided to take his name, fine, you know, we'll go with that. I'm excited. I think it'll be a good show. I think, you know, it'll be stuff in the day. It's the part of Star Wars I like. You know, it's the Jedi stuff. It's the old desert stuff. It's all, you know, everything's falling apart. It's exciting, you know. That's the stuff I like more than the...
Yet, strangely, you're not into The Bad Batch, which is trying to do exactly the same thing.
Oh, you know, it's just a tough watch. I got, I think, 3 or 4 episodes in. I think we did a sort of episode analysis for a few episodes, didn't we? Or maybe for one episode of the show.
We did it on the pilot, definitely.
So it's, I feel like, you know, The Bad Batch doesn't know what kind of show it wants to be. And you know, this is having given up early on, I guess. So maybe it got better. But it's...
No.
Yeah, there you go. It didn't... You know, because it had parts of it that were really just fucking dark. You know, when they were just, like, killing all the civilians and stuff like that. And you're like, okay, it's that kind of show. And then huge chunks of it to, you know, the girl, Omega, learning to be brave. Yeah. And it didn't all fit together. It was, you know, which world are we in? What show is this? What is the tone that you want from this show? It didn't know what it was all about. Bad Batch is one of those where it's like, it's my kind of formula, man. I normally love this stuff. So you have to fuck it up pretty badly for me not to be into it. but somehow Bad Batch has managed and MODOK's managed it.
Yeah, and both are ones that I'm up to date with, and I couldn't tell you why. But no, I mean, Bad Batch is that, again, trying to kind of work a story in between the stories and intersect with characters. Sahira from Rebels turned up on the last two because.
And I don't think that's where the show falls down. You know, I don't think it's falling down trying to be. I think it's just it doesn't know what kind of show it wants to be. It doesn't has not figured its own language out. And I think Mandalorian did straight away. You know, it set out its stall straight away and stuck with it. And you knew you were going to be in for this kind of ride.
Yeah. And it's very difficult to make that transition from telling an animated story into a live action story. And Mandalorian did that very well from picking up where they were with the Clone Wars and where they were with Rebels. And then, you know, pick the story up with the Mandalorian and to take it live action. So it'll be interesting to see whether Avatar can do the same thing when that comes to Netflix. So I love how both of you have just given up on all of these transitions. It's just like whatever gets out of this hot conversation. Just tell me when I have to make my recommendations.
Yeah, cheerio.
So Netflix is going ahead with the Avatar live action adaptation despite the departure of the creators Michael Dante Dimitino and Brian Konietzko. Apologies for destroying your name there, Brian. They've both stepped away because of creative differences. However, Avatar, working under the trade title of Trade Winds, will begin filming in November this year and will wrap in May 2022 with Albert Kim as the showrunner. It became apparent that there are going to be some major deviations from source material, including changes to central characters, and the nature of the series' bending abilities will be treated as a more mystical force. So Aang, for instance, apparently will be adopted at birth and struggle with questions about how he fits in. His loving parents will work hard to make him feel accepted. He's grown to become more generous, kind-hearted, and cheerful. He's also gifted with an incredible mystical power he doesn't really understand. It could be the key to saving the world from global conflict. It's a responsibility he's reluctant to accept because it will take him away from family, friends, and everything he knows. Similar, Katara and Sokka are going to have some changes themselves. So they will still lose their mother, but it is likely to be due to a supernatural event and not the Fire Nation raid as depicted in the animated show. Zuko, who was one of the key characters in the series, has also been rewritten. His description revealed that he will be competing with Aang for a key role in a mysterious project, the details of which have not been yet revealed.
Wow. Very different.
Yeah. So the two co-creators who stepped away when putting the announcement out said, whatever version ends up on screen, it will not be what Brian and I had envisioned or intended to make.
Wow.
They have since both been appointed to Nickelodeon's Avatar Studios,
yep,
who are looking to create a wide range of new Avatar material.
So here's the thing. It, you know, them stepping away, fucking awful sign. You know, we've already had a live-action version of Avatar that most fans of the show will pretend doesn't even exist and really has such little to do with the actual show, and that was the M. Night Shyamalan version. So again, them stepping away from this just makes you think, fuck, it's going to be awful. I'm taking the Transformers fan approach to this, thinking this isn't going to be my Avatar. but my avatar is still going to be there. My cartoon is still going to be around. If anything, this could drive interest and money towards the avatar that I really like. So right now I can buy toys from 35 years ago because of Michael Bay's awful movies and because of the interest from this, these guys are getting to continue to grow the Avatar universe. So it's not ending with Korra. We get to see what's before, what's next. So that's really exciting. So I was following this from its early days, really, from the announcements, from when they were both on it and what they were trying to build, and that was really exciting. The thoughts of it moving away from, you know, the source material, that's, I don't always think that's a bad thing. I think, you know, I want to see a new story, because if a story's been told perfectly, it's like that thing about remakes where you say, you know, don't remake, only remake bad films. If a film is good, then that's the film. You know, you're not going to remake it any better, don't bother. And Avatar's perfect, so fucking don't remake it. If you want to do something different, great. I mean, I have no high hopes, particularly for the live-action show. If it is not awful, that'll be a nice surprise. But if it's driving money into these guys and giving them the creative freedom to go and actually make proper shows, amazing. You know, Avatar and Korra are both so fucking good. I've raved about them so many times, you know, so often. I think I might get some like Aang and Zuko action figures out of this, so I'm excited.
So there are new Avatar action figures. Have you seen them?
No. Ooh, that is exciting.
I'm trying to find them at the moment. I thought they were Super 7, but it doesn't look like they are. Diamond Select.
Okay.
Have some. So they're up to wave 4. They're pretty good looking new figures. So I will send you a link so you can marvel at them.
What's been really great with the Avatar fandom, I think, in general, right? So Avatar, the cartoon, got onto Netflix fairly recently, and then Korra was on Prime around the same time, and then Korra went onto Netflix as well. So you suddenly had this like new, like tons of people watching it for the first time, right? And there was, I'm so used to fandoms just being dicks, right? So because, you weren't here from the beginning. It's all this kind of bollocks. Not the one I grew up with, this old bollocks, whatever. And this particular fandom in general has been so welcoming. And part of that is just the ethos of the show. So, you know, like the subreddit, if anyone's being a bit of a dick in the subreddit, new fans, they quote Uncle Iroh. And then that just stops those people in their tracks, you know. Stay true to the ethos of the thing that you're a fan of, basically. Because the story is just so, so wholesome. Yeah, so I think great. I'm up for all.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it privately. We've talked about it on here that following your recommendation, my 9-year-old son found Avatar, and I've lost count of how many times he's gone back and watched from the beginning to the end the series. He's watched Korra as well. He wasn't as into Korra. But Avatar, he absolutely just devoured. He loved all of the characters. He loved, you know, Toph when she comes in. He loved Zuko's redemption. He loved all of it. Absolutely despised the film. Again, with he found it on his own. He watched it on his own. I didn't try to influence. I didn't try to be snarky or anything with it. And his arguments were the same as everyone else's, which is it moves too fast. You know, things like Zuko's turn is happens in the space of 40 minutes, which just isn't earned. He doesn't go and find half of the teachers. He doesn't struggle to learn all of the skills. And I think it was, in a weird way, I think it was really good for my 9-year-old son to realize that, you know, here you have the story of the most powerful being in the universe, the one that's going to unite everything and is born with all of this power. And it doesn't come easy. He still has to work at it. He still has to practice. Yeah. He still has to learn. He still mucks up. It's not just, you know, this given right that he can do all of this. I think that he kind of liked the imperfections of all of it. And it sounds to me as if what they're talking about takes away huge amounts of, you know, I've enjoyed the fact that my son has found out about, you know, Buddhism principles and martial arts principles and reincarnation and things like this through this program, and a lot of kind of Taoism in there and a few other, you know, teachings. And by making it this kind of weird mystic kind of, you know, it's closer to, it sounds closer almost to My Hero Academia and, you know, them having these quirks that mean they can change it. Rather, I still haven't, I've avoided calling it a kink again. I'm happy. But it feels like that rather than, you know, it's a tribal thing and it's a taught down by generations thing and it's a reincarnation thing and it's a tribe thing and it's a, yeah, so it's a bit of a strange step. B, I don't know what your relationship with Avatar is. So are you a fan? Are you looking forward to this? Where do you fall on this?
So I was first introduced to Avatar in the movie, the live action movie that T just referred to, which I didn't think
what
was
movie?
That bad.
The other one.
Avatar.
Never heard of it.
Okay. The one with Dev Patel. Tumbleweed. Okay. And then I tried to get into the cartoons a little bit. I remember seeing them on TV, and I thought it was a bit odd at the time with, you know, a kid with a pointy up arrow on his forehead. Was a little bit, didn't understand it. So I wouldn't say I was into it, but we'll give it a show. Now it's on Netflix, and you know, I might give it a try, see if I can get into it.
Before or after Transformers the movie?
Yeah. Probably before, to be honest.
So it's the third thing when we've run out of everything. It's Avatar, then it's Transformers the movie, and then it's Avatar.
Yeah, if you want to put it like that.
I don't know. It just, I mean, so I love the fact that there's Avatar Studios now and there's lots of conversations about the new properties that are coming out. And it feels like they're going before the Last Airbender series, that possibly during the Last Airbender series, beyond Korra. So it looks like they're really kind of expanding that out, which I think is interesting. And as you said, you know, licensing and stuff like that, you know, new toys, new opportunities, new magazines, new books, new comics, all will be great. But yeah, reading that, it feels like that is more exciting to me than the Netflix live action.
It really depends on how it's made. I mean, if they do it justice, then there will be true to the original, which they said they're not going to be.
You always don't want the Netflix series to be too good, in a sense, because if that becomes the thing that the known brand, the thing that everyone recognizes, then that's the thing you build off of, you know. And I don't think this will be the case anyway. And which is also why I can understand why the creators want to stick to their original vision. You know, Aang is a certain way, and we want that to be true of Aang because that's the thing you're going to see. So if anything, I just think it will drive people to the cartoon. You know, if Netflix is holding on to their Avatar license, the cartoon license, then why wouldn't they doing the live action series? People are going to get a couple of episodes into this and then want to watch the original show. You know, and that's great. And people will discover these things. I mean, I was just thinking about your son and, you know, sort of Korra. And one of the things I sort of say is, don't watch season one, episode one of Korra straight after season three finale of Avatar, because it's kind of a transition, and it's quite a tough transition to make, and a little bit of a gap, a breather, a show in between, a palate cleanser, I think helps. And to all the new fans now, you know, go watch Avatar now, and then you'll have your palate cleanser before the new stuff comes out, because again, it's not going to feel like, you know, season four of Avatar is going to feel different. But it will expand that world, and that'll be really cool.
Yeah, so I think he used the film as the palate cleanser. I don't know if that really went down very well. But yeah, we wait and see. I think it was May we were expecting that to finish shooting, so it's probably going to be the end of next year before we actually get to experience what that series runs like and how we feel at the end of it. But one series that we did get to experience and get to talk about how we feel at the end of it is Loki. Series 6, episode 6, sorry, is in the books. We now know all that there is to know. So we are going to have a conversation about it. However, just in case you have not yet caught up with Loki, what are you doing? We are going to give our recommendations so that you can leave us at this point, should you wish to, and come back and listen once you have caught up. So, T, what would you like to make your recommendation this week?
So after the Shang-Chi trailer dropped, the first thing I did is, I want to read a Shang-Chi comic, because I've never read a Shang-Chi comic. There was one that had just sort of come out, but in fact, it hadn't come out when the trailer dropped. It was still on pre-order, the trade anyway. So this is Shang-Chi by Jean Luen Yang, and it's called Brothers and Sisters. And it's a 6-issue, I think. No, sorry, 5-issue. The first 5 issues of Shang-Chi, which ran in 2020. And it's just so much fun. So it's set up to introduce you to a character that you might not know. So there's a lot of like backstory stuff and quickly filling in and, you know, the old exposition dumps and stuff like that, which is great because they know what they're doing. You know, this is Marvel now. They know, oh, yeah, film's coming out. There's going to be interest. Let's make this a jumping on point. It's a great jumping on point. And it's very kind of cheesy 70s kung fu movie stuff. You know, we are brothers and therefore, and well, we are siblings, and there's a secret society and we honor each other and the ghost of our father and our uncle and this secret society. But you know, all of the great tropes you've got from all these old stories and stuff like that, all thrown together into a film, and is a great sort of introduction to all the sort of Shang-Chi characters, including, you know, his MI6 agent ex-girlfriend, introduces, as I said, his new siblings, him sort of struggling with, you know, being a normal person, being a kind of ex-Avenger, being a superhero, all this kind of stuff together. It's quite a quick read. The art's excellent. It's consistent and beautiful. It is just kind of like 70s, 80s kung fu film in comic book form. It's a lot of fun, and you don't need any backstory to read it. And as I say, it's available in trade form.
Absolutely excellent. I think that the interest in Shang-Chi is going to continue to rise. That trailer looks insane.
Yeah.
Cannot wait to see what happens with it. B, what you got for us?
Right, so I'm going to recommend a movie without telling you the title. What I will say is, if I read a snippet from the script, and then you guys can guess what it is. So the main character says, "I know Kung Fu."
Shang-Chi.
Close.
Show me.
Very good. Very good. So I want to recommend The Matrix, the original godfather of all movies, that we know and love.
Isn't Godfather the Godfather movies?
I mean, there's at least one film you've recommended before that's about 22 years ahead of The Matrix.
This is true.
So I'm not sure you can really class it as the Godfather of.
Since,
I mean, it's not really the Godfather 3 of.
No, it's I'll give you that. But what I want to say is ever since this movie, all sort of genre movies have some sort of relation to this movie, some sort of aspect that was originally introduced in this movie. I mean, I remember seeing this in the cinema just outside Walsall's showcase for cinema, and it completely blew my mind. And it still blows my mind. It is such a timeless classic. And, you know, this movie, I think, is what possibly Endgame or Infinity War will be like in 30, 40 years' time. So, you know, I'm sure everyone's watched The Matrix. If you haven't, where on earth have you been? And if you have, watch it again, because it's fantastic.
I was 16 when The Matrix came out, and I was fucking obsessed. Like, I bought the long coat, wore it all summer, it was baking hot, wore the sunglasses in winter when there was no fucking sun. I couldn't afford the famous banana phone, but for my crappy Nokia, I got this cover that had a bit of a slip out thing, but you had to do it manually with your hand. Their website had a bit, and because this is an audio podcast, you can't see me doing the air quotes, but a bit that you could hack into it. But it's like an Easter egg where there was a little icon you could click on the corner and just access a bit more crap. And then, you know, I had the screensaver downloaded. Yeah. It was fucking everything to like 15-year-old T, just obsessed with this film. And recently, well, not so recently, but, you know, saw the 20th anniversary re-release, which was depressing that it's been fucking 20 years since The Matrix. And I watched it with my brothers, and what was quite interesting is my younger brother, who's sort of like 9 years younger than me, it turned out he hadn't seen it. He didn't even realize he'd not seen it.
Wow.
Because it's such a live thing, right? Because I was obsessed with it, we always talked about it, it was a big thing. It was just kind of like through osmosis he knew this film. And it was only sitting in the cinema where I was like, oh shit, I don't know this thing. And of course, and it is, the thing you say about it being timeless, of course it wasn't just influential. It was parodied to fucking shit, right? So everything, you know, this was 1999 it came out, right? So, you know, every fucking film in 2001 had bullet time in it, had all these kind of same cheesy effects. And took away from the, you know, it wasn't used in an interesting and exciting way. It was just used to do bullet time or to parody bullet time or whatever. So it kind of, you almost couldn't watch it for a while. And then I was thinking about my brother thinking, he's seen parodies of this. Like we watched Kung Pao Into the Fist and he was cracking up just like I was cracking up because it's a parody of the bullet time stuff, but without watching the original. And that's how big that film was. You didn't even have to fucking watch it to have watched it, if you know what I mean. Great shout, Big. Excellent film. The trilogy just got better and better. No, it didn't.
Although you did recommend Matrix Revolutions.
I really like Revolutions. Reloaded was a tougher watch, but I'm a big fan of Revolutions.
I mean, yeah, to your point about it being the Godfather of, in his sense of it being so referenced that you've watched the film, even if you've not watched the film, I think it's up there with The Godfather, with Star Wars, with Casablanca, with those films that have those lines and have those very, very parodied and homaged moments that, you know, you might go back and watch the film later on in life and realize just how much has been lifted from there.
It's like you might not appreciate watching Citizen Kane because, you know, those things like the zoom shots and the dolly shots and stuff like that, that's just the language of cinema to you now. It's only when you watched it at the time that you would have gone, what the fuck? That's a new way of telling a story.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely brilliant recommendation. I mean, the Wachowskis were visionary then, and can't wait to see what they do with number four with Yahya Abdul-Mateen. I think that's going to be definitely one to worth checking out. For my recommendation, I'm going to pick up on something that recently just finished on Comic Run, which was Hickman's X-Men's Hellfire Gala. So this was the latest in his stories. So we'd had The House of X and The Powers of Ten fairly recently, about a year and a bit ago. Mm-hmm. We then had the Ten of Swords event a little while ago, and this is the Hellfire Gala event that ran through 11 issues across the X-Men comic family, and basically tells the story of a gala, of an event where Emma Frost and the Hellfire organization has put on an open house for humanity et al. To come and experience Krakoa's modernization, their best of all that they can give, in a way to try and get them accepted into the world. What they show, though, and this is told in a very strange way, so in the first issue, for instance, you get the very beginning of the gala, and then you get when everyone's leaving the gala, and you pick up this thing that something magical and something huge has happened, and the characters like Captain America and Doctor Doom and everyone who's been invited on this because of the dignitaries across the world are all very split on what's happened and whether this is a good idea or a bad idea or what. And it's only later on that you find out what's happened, which is not happy with just their island on Earth. Mutantdom has decided to take to the stars, and over the course of 24 hours has terraformed Mars into an inhabitable planet. So mutants have now claimed their own planet, and in doing so have also negotiated with the galaxy that actually this is going to be the capital planet of the solar system that Earth is in, therefore kind of negating Earth's importance across the place. So it's quite a big story. It's quite one that could kind of set up, because it now starts creating mutants into the cosmic space rather than just on an Earth, and moving far away from that point where they are the absolute outsiders, and you know, 198 left after M-Day and all the rest of it, to a point where actually they have got a thriving population, their own planet, and they now have far more of a say in universal affairs. So really interesting to kind of see how it all plays through, really interesting to see the dynamics of the different teams, of the different factions within Krakoa, and how they play out with the normies, the humans across the world, and the world's reaction to them basically as their own. Really interesting stuff going on. It's just finished its chapter runs through the comics, so the trade will probably be out in a couple of weeks, about a month. Just a really interesting story to pick up.
Good show.
I love that Marvel trades come so quickly after the conclusion of a run. Because, this is something I want to pick up. And actually, I've not picked up a lot of the Hickman X-Men stuff for a good few years now. So I'm kind of up for picking up a whole bunch of trades. And it's nice to know I have to wait particularly long for this. Great. Good show, Jeff.
I think the Hickman stuff is definitely worth picking up and reading through, because the refocusing, and you know, it's funny because it's, you know, if you're a cynical person, which obviously none of us are, you could kind of draw parodies that they've suddenly, Hickman has tried to re-establish mutants and mutantdom and what it means to be a mutant within the Marvel universe and where they fit and sit amongst the Avengers and the Fantastic Four, et cetera, et cetera. Very timely in the sense that Marvel and Disney are about to do exactly the same thing in the cinematic universe. The House of X and Powers of Ten comics are very much about trying to bring in a lot of the stuff that has happened and make it canon and make it fit. And how do you get, you know, the likes of Magneto and Apocalypse and Charles Xavier on the same page and working together as a united mutant kind rather than, you know, mutants fighting mutants all of the time. It's been a really kind of interesting kind of run through. So it'll be interesting to watch where they go next with Inferno.
That's exciting.
If that is where you are going to leave us because you haven't watched Loki yet, then we wish you goodbye. B, I know you want to say goodbye because you get sad if you can't.
Cheerio.
There we go. However, if you have watched Loki episode 6, then let's get into talking about it. So we finally found out who was the man at the end of time. And it is he who remains. Really kind of interesting stuff. So initially, when that door opened and Miss Minutes was there, what were you two thinking?
I thought it was going to be a variant of Loki. Obviously, when Miss Minutes said, "He who remains," obviously, I kind of knew then. I didn't kind of realize that they, because in the comics, he remains is not Kang. So they've played around with the character a little bit. It was great. It was not expected. Wouldn't say it was on the same level as the Mandalorian and when Luke Skywalker appeared. But you know, they could have put Mephisto in there and, you know, would have been well up for that. Awesome.
I mean, to introduce variants and the multiverse in this way was bold, I think. But earned, I think. I loved the your choices are you kill me, I'm the big bad, but you know, you make the way for something worse. What do you want to do? And Sylvie made the choice. T, how did you find the episode?
God, I fucking loved it. I did not, you know, I was so convinced it was had to be just another variant. You know, it's not just playing with your expectations of someone who's watching this show. It's playing with your expectations of someone who's watched the two previous Marvel shows as well. So you think you know the language of a Disney Plus Marvel show. You think you know that it's a self-contained show and it's going to be, you know, this many episodes and no more, and there'll be no second season, so they're going to have to wrap it all up. And how the fuck are they going to wrap it all up? And there's no way they're going to introduce a brand new character in the finale, because that's not what they do. That's not how the show works. That's how these shows work. And it just fucking threw it all out the window. And that was great. I mean, the moment I was watching it with my wife, who doesn't know who Kang is, and at some point I was like, fuck me, is it actually going to be Kang? And then she got all confused. I was like, oh, I'm not going to explain it. Just watch. And it worked for her as a big bad that we don't know, as much as it worked for me as, hey, this is this comic book character. Because that's the thing I thought wouldn't land, right? I thought, if you don't know Kang, what the fuck is this show? If you had told me going in, they're going to introduce a brand new villain in the final episode, that this is going to be a way into the rest of the movies, and you know, the way the biggest complaint about Marvel movies, apart from the kind of homogeneity of the tone sometimes, is the fact that they sometimes feel like trailers for the next movie. And if you told me that was going to happen in Loki, I'd just be like, what the fuck? But actually, no, it was brilliant. It was brilliant the way it set it all up. It's brilliant the way it feels like it's part of this larger universe. It was brilliant the way it fucked with your expectations yet again. You know, all of that stuff around, it's going to be Mephisto, it's going to, and it's not. And now it's like, well, obviously it's not going to be Kang. That's what it is! Like, you got me again, fucking Marvel. Well done. What a great show. What a great cliffhanger. How good to know. I mean, just the fact that it's season one is a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because I was watching going, they'll never get Owen Wilson back. That must cost them so much money. Oh, man, Tom Hiddleston's too big. It's just going to be done, do this and done. This is Tom Hiddleston's retirement. None of that is true. That's amazing.
Or is it? Because don't forget, this show is called Loki, and we know there's a ton of variants.
Yeah, so... but three quarters of them are played by Tom Hiddleston. So if you're playing the odds,
possibility,
it's either going to be Tom Hiddleston or an alligator. What for me saved this in a point was that mid-credit reveal of Loki season two, because the Renslayer character went nowhere, and was one of the biggest dangling threads. And if that was kind of the end of it, I don't think it's a storyline big enough to pick up in any of the films going forward. So it just felt like it was kind of a waste of a character and waste of a whatever. So the fact that that's going to be something that comes up in season two, maybe she's working with Loki as someone who remembers, bearing in mind we've seen that the variations to the TVA and the fact that Kang seems to be in charge of it now, more candidly than he was previously. It bodes well. It bodes well that she's going to come in and support. But as an introduction, I think Jonathan Majors, you know, coming in and kind of giving us a taste of what he might do with Kang,
awesome. Yeah.
Was brilliant. I loved the playful nature of him. I loved that kind of assuredness of you know, knowing everything that's going to happen. When they crossed that timeline and it got to a point where actually he didn't understand anything that was going on now, that slight alteration, you know, started off quite nervous, possibly a little scared, and then just excited about the fact that I don't know what's going to happen. This is amazing. I thought it was really kind of nuanced and pretty good.
When they first announced Kang as being the big bad for this phase of, so I thought, really, you know, is he all that? Is he as powerful as Thanos? Is he comparable? And I think this really hit it home for me in the fact that he actually knows everything, as in this character, and someone who, you know, from the Council of Kangs or whatever they're going to call it, I thought, you know, wow, this character could be the most powerful thing that, you know, worse than Thanos, better than Galactus. So
I mean, in the moment that he kind of talks about being from the 31st century, you kind of get an idea of, you know, this is going to be a bit special. And you're right, you know, when Kang's kind of rumored to be the big bad, but he's due to debut in Ant-Man and Wasp: Quantumania, you're kind of sitting there going, well, he's not really going to be like an A-level threat then, is he? If he's, you know, following on from Yellow Jacket and the Ghost. But no, just brilliance, I thought, all the way through. And, you know, I can't believe that we have to wait for Owen Wilson to be on his jet ski for a bit longer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that I was really disappointed in, I mean, the three Disney Plus shows that have come out have always kind of almost left me depressed. I mean, WandaVision, you know, the breakup again of Vision and Scarlet Witch, Falcon, Winter Soldier, you know, what happened with the, you know, I can't remember her name, the Flag Smasher. And about, you know, that. And this, you know, Loki finally finds love in himself and he gets stabbed in the back, effectively, essentially. Although she was saving him. Was she saving him?
Second opportunity. Well, she was getting him out of the way so he didn't stop. She didn't stop him. He didn't stop her. But we've got series two. So, you know, it can continue. it can grow on. We will see them come together, I am sure. I cannot believe that Sylvie is done. So I think that we will wait and see. For me, I think it's probably the most rewatchable out of the three, like as in all of them. I have watched episodes of WandaVision and episodes of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but don't kind of have that, you know, start to finish kind of thing. Whereas even with the bottle episode with them on the exploding on the train, is one that I think is probably worth rewatching just to kind of pick out more of the story and work through. So I think end to end, it's the most rewatchable one.
Yeah, don't agree. And it will be rewatched because there'll be that time, right? It'll be coming up to season two. I'll want to do a rewatch of this.
Absolutely. Or we've already watched Netflix's Master of the Universe Revelations and are waiting for something else to watch. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So, surprise to no one, I think sounds like we really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And now we wait for What's If? What If?
When does What If come along?
Sorry?
When does What If drop?
I want to say it's around the 11th of August. I think we're about 3 or 4 weeks away from it.
So Marvel have been so good. So Disney have been so good at giving us a show every week for, you know, this ongoing thing. It's a shame that suddenly we've got this sort of 3 week gap.
Well, hopefully there'll be a behind the scenes
episode
of Loki.
So. Yeah. And I think there's something. I think there's another what behind the scenes of. I want to say there's another one of WandaVision, maybe. So we will see. We will see what they fill the time with. There's always the Bad Batch and MODOK.
Yeah.
but until then, we will leave you and come back to speak to you next week in an episode that I'm sure will be music to your ears. keep looking after each other. Keep enjoying everything that's going on. Keep getting involved in the conversation at Geeking and Pod. Keep continuing to rate, review, subscribe, and share, please. And we will speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
Adios.
Cheerio.